Hello, everyone, and welcome to the North American Irish Coaches Show. Tonight we have Patricia Hughes on the show, or to her friends and everyone in the United Soccer Coaching World and the soccer world, Trish. So, Trish, welcome to the show, and I hope all is well with you and your family.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks, Enda. Dara, so glad to be here tonight with you guys.
So, Trish is the current College Services Director at the United Soccer Coaches, and we're delighted to have her on. A very high regarding position within United Soccer Coaches, and it's great to see someone from Ireland, in that role and doing us proud, Trish. So, congratulations again. I know you're only a couple of months in the role, so well done, Trish. So, tell us about how you ended up in the US, where you're from, and how the journey kind of came to be in America. I mean, we all have kind of a journey of where we started, but what's your story?
So I grew up in Walkinstown in Dublin, and my younger years, at the time there wasn't a ton of organized girls soccer for me. I was grew up playing with boys on the road, eventually got picked up by a club team in Tala area, moved around with Welt Sox, Rathfarnham, and at the time there were some Irish girls that had come over, Anne Thorpe, Catherine Byrne. Anne Thorpe and I grew up almost two streets over from each other, and I knew she'd gone to America. And at the time, it seemed like an awesome, fun idea, to be able to go away and play soccer full time and, of course, do your studies. So I was very fortunate to get the opportunity a very long time ago, because I'm old now. So that was kind of the start of a great journey for me from day one that I came away and went to school in a college in South Carolina. So it's been tremendous. Lots of, good mentors and good people who've been around me who've helped me in my journey along the way. So,
And for the people that don't know Trish, what were those schools that you came to and played college soccer at?
Yeah, so I came over to Coker College in South Carolina, which is now Coker University. They are a NCAA Division II school, just outside of Columbia, South Carolina. I did my 4 years there, and then took about a 2 year break in the work industry, and then decided that I wanted to give the coaching a go full time. I moved down to the University of Montevallo, just outside of Birmingham, Alabama, where I was a graduate assistant, and then from there, that's really where my journey took off. Then I was at Auburn University for about 4 years, and then from there, like most coaches, just pursued opportunities. Was up at Belmont University, went back to the University of Montevallo, and then my transition into administration has certainly moved me a little bit more as well. So just some good programs, especially schools that are succeeding at an even higher level now over the years. So,
yeah, as this podcast goes, I think we're definitely going to talk a lot more about your college days. But what were your best memories as a player? Since you came and played as a player?
God, coming away to America, I mean, you grew up back in Dublin, you're playing club, you're you dream about being full-time like the professionals that you'd watch on TV growing up. And when I came away to America to be able to play soccer in what was really a full-time capacity and study, and I had teammates that were from all over the world. So to be exposed to that level of, different cultures and a coach that really took us in and took good care of us, it was just an amazing experience. And to see the program grow from when I first arrived, we had a really talented, 2 years of players that came in, and by year three and four we were competing for championships, both conference regional championships. So it was fun to be a part of that. And of course, just the day-to-day of being a player, road trips, coming back from competing and winning, and just the student experience was really a dream come true. When I look back now, I mean, I still have such great fond memories of the experience, and I keep in touch with all my pals and teammates and stuff from when I was in college. So,
of course, yeah,
good stuff, Trish. You've been honored with to play for Ireland and have many caps for Ireland. What was your best memories, or is there anything that stands out for you, like when you put on that green jersey? Any special memories? Obviously, the first one's probably great, but I'm sure you have a few special memories that you'd like to discuss.
Sure, I remember getting called up with the U18s and going down to Cork to play down and staying down in Silver Springs with Eamon Darcy at the time, Mick Darcy's father, who, as you know, was just a legend coaching the game, and he was just such a kind, nurturing guy that took us all in as we were, you know, part of that U18 squad. But then getting called up into the senior team, being able to travel all around Europe and compete against some of the best players at the time in Europe. Probably the highlight for me, though, was when we went over and we got to play in Wembley Stadium, which would have been the Irish team played the English women's team for the first time in Wembley. It was part of the bicentennial, the FA celebration. And we got to meet some of the Premier League players at the time, and to come out of the tunnel and walk onto the field in the Irish jersey. I mean, it's stuff that dreams are made of. So, I mean, it's a dream opportunity. You get to come in, you hear your national anthem, and you know you work hard, and to feel it, to see it, and it pays off, and it's just a really good feeling. So I have so many brilliant memories of my time with the Irish team. Football, to be very honest with you, has been really, really good to me and just given me so many great, great opportunities. So
now, Trish, Ireland versus England. Did you get a few tackles in?
I did. And at the time, the Rooney fella decided that he was going to try and make me into a left back, except he forgot to tell me that there was a girl named Terry Boom Boom Davis who was playing in Italy full time, and she was very big and very fast. And all I can tell you is I spent a whole lot of time looking at her elbows and her rear end as she blew by me. I got a couple of good crunchers in, but I can't say I lasted for 90 minutes. I think that was the start and end of my defensive career. So,
yeah, you've just mentioned a few names there that you had to go up against. But was there any players in the college or at senior level with Ireland or anybody that you had played at that we would have maybe known about or even talk about the different countries at that time that you got to play with that traveled to the college that you played at?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in Dublin, I mean, in the era that I was coming through on, there was the likes of Linda Gorman, Bridie Flood, Helena Stapleton, you know, Frank's sister. Yeah. Those would have been the players that we looked up to. Anne Thorpe, Catherine Byrne. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of players that come in ahead of me. Of course, I had an opportunity as I was kind of coming out of the Irish system with Olivia O'Toole, of course, Claire Scanlon, two legends in the game, in the women's game, you know, two of the best that have ever to come out of Ireland. Coming over to the US, playing in college, I mean, gosh, with so many great players, really where the opportunities came was in the summers, going to work some of the big camps, being able to say you got to train and play with Abby Wambach and in a camp environment. And, you know, those are just people who are some of the trailblazers in the women's game. You know, it's fun and it's amazing now to see where the women's game has evolved into, particularly in the college ranks and the opportunities for the women over here. So, you know, just grateful to have been mentored and had these iconic players to look up to, and then to be able to come away and kind of blaze your own path is it's just great stuff. So just, you know, grateful, always grateful, forever grateful for the opportunity that Coker gave me. So,
yeah, no, it's great to hear about the different people and to hear those types of stories. I mean, I met Frank Old Trafford the last time I was there, so it's crazy.
Yeah.
Trish, so just to kind of follow on from Dara's question, you know, obviously you played against a lot of good players, but is there any game you played against like a player and you thought, wow, she's going to be special? Like, was there anyone that you kind of came up against that really stood out, like back in the day when you played, like that went on to have a really big career? I know you
definitely Olivia O'Toole, Claire Scanlon, because we were just kind of crossing paths. I was on a little bit older, right, probably would have been in that generation ahead. I mean, those are some of the special players that if the game were evolving from then to now, they would still be top level players who, you know, we talk about timeless players that they would evolve as the game has evolved. There's certain players that maybe wouldn't have evolved and stayed with the level of game. Olivia O'Toole, Claire Scanlon, I mean, just brilliant technical ability, great vision, presence on the field. I mean, those are two of the best that I was ever able to play against. And certainly, you know, I've had a long time friendship with Claire Scanlon, and I mean, she's just one of the best in the game and has just been a tremendous a leader and icon for women's soccer, particularly from Ireland. So,
Olivia O'Toole, a record goal scorer for Ireland or record appearances for Ireland? What did she have one of them records back in the day, or was that?
I think she had record appearances. I mean, she had so much opportunity, but she was a Dublin girl at heart, and just stayed close to home, and just now just is really committed, from what I understand, to helping promote the game on the women's side, and just providing opportunities for others. So.
Yeah, a big name in women's football for sure. So the journey for everyone, right, is different. But how did you, when you graduated playing, was it for you like, right, I'm gonna be a college coach, or was it a natural progression for you, or did you go into another job first and realize, hey, here I want to get back out in the soccer field? Like, how did you decide to become a coach, and what was that decision?
Yeah, when I graduated from college, I was working at a hospital. My undergrad was in exercise science, and I was working in a cardiac rehabilitation program. I was still involved in playing at the time, but had gotten an opportunity to go on and get my master's degree as a graduate assistant coach at the University of Monaghan. And there had been others, Sue Kelly, Noreen Herlihy, who's at Akron now, who had gone down that route. And to be able to go then and get your master's and have it paid for and get a salary to be able to cover all your expenses, living and otherwise. And then to be in a bigger city then, where you had access to playing opportunities with club level and stuff like that. So that was really what brought me into the coaching ranks. It wasn't that it was something that I thought I would do. I think it kind of happened organically for me by virtue of my master's. And then after I had finished my master's, I got an opportunity to go to Auburn University, which is a big SEC school. It was a dream job at one of the top universities in the country with an athletics program that is second to none. So you go into this huge athletic environment where they have a football program that puts 100,000 fans in the stadium on the weekends. I mean, it was just a phenomenal opportunity. And that's really what kind of carved out my path, was just being around soccer-minded people who had made big careers out of it, and opportunity that just came my way that was too good to pass up. And that was really the start of it for me. As I progressed in the Division I game, I found my fit more so in the D2 environment. I liked the smaller school environment. I liked being able to have that relationship where you're mentoring players both as students and as athletes. And but again, just really had just good mentors and around me who made sure I got opportunities. So I stayed out of trouble, which helped as well. So.
Yeah. We believe you.
Trish, you've mentioned before the call, and we've jumped on and talked about it beforehand, but you've worked at all different levels, and you've just mentioned that as well there. As a college coach, if you were to give some advice to people like myself and even Enda, and everybody else that's listening in today, what advice would you give to them, and why is that, or how did you learn the hard way about being a college soccer coach?
Yeah, I think there's a fit for everybody, and I think you have to just grow your network and figure out where your fit is. I like the small school environment. I like the intimacy of being in a kind of a smaller campus environment. But it's hard to exist in a 30,000-40,000 student environment, because again, you're tied in heavily with just the athletics. Whereas when you're on a smaller campus, the family, if you will, the student family and the school environment is just it's a little bit more palatable, or at least it was for me. I would say every division has something unique to offer. I think it depends on the balance that you're looking for. The Division I environment at the highest level, it can be very cutthroat, and the results drive. Winning drives your success and your ability to sustain as a head coach long-term. So the pressures are a little bit different. Division II, certainly same pressures exist, but I think it's a little bit more of a balanced in terms of how you work with students off the field and the amount of support staff and resource you have. Division III, again, it's just degrees of separation. I would say grow your network and build that relationship with those who are who have experience. I think there's a lot of Irish that are around the US who have been very successful. And I can say without doubt, everybody's eager to help each other succeed and go on. And I would say in the college game right now, you know, it's a vulnerable space to be a head coach because you live out your life, unfortunately, through your players on social media, and you have to make sure that there's a strong culture and a work ethic, and you have to be able to make the decision on the right kind of players that fit your program, because oftentimes what can be a great player that isn't a good fit could create problems for you internally. So I think it's just knowing the landscape of the environment you're in and setting a good standard of, you know, behavior and expectations within your program. And I think if you take care of your players and you're good to them, both on and off the field in terms of academic support and other, that's where the retention in the program is important, and you can create like truly a family culture. So.
For sure, great advice. You've hit on a lot of great topics there, Trish. So we'll go back again to your college days. What's your best memory of you as a college coach? Like, as coach when you were coaching, was there anything that stood out? Obviously, and don't say it's playing CBU because you know that.
Well, me and Kieran Hiblick, we milled each other for Kieran Hiblick and I go back. We have 10 years of killing each other on the sidelines. To be honest with you, at the time we were in the Gulf South Conference, you know, you work really hard to get to the conference championship if you can, and if you're lucky, you get into the, you know, the national tournament. And for years, we were trapped in the conference with the University of West Florida, and Joe Bartlinski, you know, he's a legend in the women's game, ranked top five in the country year in, year out. And I had taken my licks from him and Gareth O'Sullivan, might I add, at CBU at the time. But in 2007, we were just stacked full of talent, and we won the conference. We went on to the Sweet 16. We went down to St. Leo. We were kind of the underdogs going into the regional tournament. You know, we were down 1-0, I think, with 10 minutes left. The fans were cheering. The game was over. With 2 minutes left, we tied the game, went into overtime, and won on golden goal to go to the quarterfinals. And, I mean, it was just brilliant. And to have that kind of a buzz and to see the hard work. And when you've done it for years, to then be able to make it and get there, I mean, it's stuff that you just don't forget about. I mean, I think we were on a high for over a year. And again, just fortunate to have landed some unbelievable players. Cami Capicu, Natalie Martineau, you know, Stacey Balin, Adele Jackson, all those players. It was just some fabulous players that there were a tight-knit group that worked hard. And it was a dream year, to be very honest with you. So.
Some tough football in men's and women's in the Gulf South. I've learned that over my first year here, for sure. So we're going to move forward a little bit, Trish. Administration. Talk to us about your move into administration. And was that, you know, again, was it kind of a planned move, or was it kind of something that somebody said, hey, we'd like you to fill this role, and then it kind of progressed? Yeah. How did it work for you?
So as I was advancing, you know, I stayed at Montevallo for almost 19 years, and I found myself, you know, spending more and more time on committees and strategic planning and that kind of stuff. I like the administrative piece. I like the ability to, you know, impact students, a larger body of students on a greater level. In 2007, ironically, I was asked to serve as interim director of athletics at the University of Montevallo in the midst of coaching, probably one of the best years of my coaching career. And I served in that role for a year. I had a president that really took me in under his wing and gave me lots of mentoring and support. And at that point, I think I knew long-term, I had to make a decision to either, you know, I'd been at Montevallo for a very, very long time, and I liked administration. And I think when the opportunity presents, you know, you either have to seize it or you have to let it pass you. And I knew by 2011, I'd been coaching at Montevallo for a long time. I was probably a little bit burned out, to be honest with you, but I'd gotten a full-time administrative opportunity, and I knew it was the right time. Because I think my lens at that point had started to shift on how can I help student athletes at a higher level? How can I have an impact? How can I mentor coaches? Certainly by virtue of learning from my own mistakes and then seeing the cycle of new coaches coming through and the impact that I could have. So that was really where it started for me. I had a new AD that came into Montevallo who gave me an opportunity, Jim Hurley, who's a close friend and mentor now. And that was really the start of my administrative cycle. In 2014, I got an opportunity to go up to the University of New Haven as a senior associate AD. And again, it was just one of those opportunities when it comes, you know, you don't let it pass you. And it meant picking up and relocating my family up to the Northeast and you know, that's the hard part, right? We make these big moves pursuing success, but that's the compromise. I think you have to be willing. That's probably the difference over here is most of my family haven't left Dublin 12, whereas I just keep moving. And every now and again, they'll say, where are you now? You know, my mother will send me a card addressed to somewhere in Connecticut with a zip code from Alabama, because I don't think she'd be willing to. So that's kind of been my journey. It just kind of evolved on its own. But I think long-term, I knew I had an administrative, you know, passion that I wanted to follow and pursue. So.
Yeah, and that has now kind of led you into the United Soccer Coaches, which is the largest coaching mentorship in the world. And it's great to have one of our own leading in that organization. Tell us what attracted you to this role and what kind of done it. And also congratulations on the new role and hope all is well with it.
Yeah, it's good. I'm 2.5 months in right now. So I was Sari Rose, a good buddy of mine in North Carolina, had reached out to me to share that there was an opening, and somehow my name had been floated in to interview for it. I had even spoken with Enda at great length about this, because I wanted to really, you know, for me to consider stepping off of a college campus into this environment, I needed to make sure that the transition career-wise was the right fit for me, and certainly where I could go and have an impact at the college level. Again, completely different scale altogether. As I researched the role, I realized that my journey, having coached in Division I, Division II, I've been an athletic director at Division III. At Coker, we started NAIA, we ended up Division II. So the fit for me administratively, I have the lens of having been a coach, certainly I've been a student athlete. And then to go into that role where now you're working as a liaison and a lobbyist on behalf of college coaches across the US, at every level with the NCAA or the NJCAA, and then to be able to collaborate then with, you know, folks. I've been on calls recently with Karina LeBlanc at CONCACAF, you know, the MLS folks or the NWSL. I mean, it's fun, juicy stuff to then know that you can work on behalf of coaches at every level. I mean, it's just a wonderful opportunity, and it was just it's been a dream come true. It's a big role. There's lots of responsibility, and I'm just kind of, you know, wading through it day by day, and just trying to see where we have opportunities for kind of new synergies and new professional development opportunities for coaches, and really support them as best we can. So,
great stuff, Trish. Women's football is flying in Ireland. National team doing really well. The national league at senior level and youth level. Great to see. There was an article recently in Ireland in one of the papers about the national team manager saying, you know, girls should maybe stay home, and you know, and while the game is light years ahead of 20 years ago or 15 years ago, what were your thoughts? I know we shared the article with you just so you could have a read of it as well, but what were your thoughts with that sort of stuff for a person like you, you know, a young girl that came over from Ireland and the college game has served so many? What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so I think the world is a much smaller place now than when I came over back in 1989. I think, you know, I think everybody has to make the decision what's best for them in terms of their playing career and their professional career off the field. I think the percentage of Irish players that get the opportunity to go over and play professionally, whether it's in England or in the leagues in Europe, I think is quite small. I think there's opportunity for collaboration with my role at United Soccer Coaches to help the FAI in understanding the opportunity. For me to come away at the time as a young female where there was very little opportunity from home, at home for me, other than playing club twice a week, you know, at the time it was the right decision. I think there has to be an opportunity for synergy, though, between the college game and the FAI, so that we can continue to see young ladies excel and exceed, whether it's on the field or certainly in their academics. You know, I think when you look at the college game in the US as a whole, and you look at the NWSL, and you look at historically the US women's national team, who by far have been the number one team in the world consistently, I think that's shifting now. But I think most of all of the US Women's National Team players, I would say a very large percentage of them came through the college game. So to say that it doesn't work, I think is a very broad statement. I think there is opportunities for players to come away. I think the key is ensuring that they get into the right fit. For a player to end up at Florida State playing under Mark Kerkorian, or I have recently had the opportunity to see Roman McLaughlin play with Central Connecticut State in the national tournament. These young women they're excelling, they're getting an education, they're growing their trade as a player. And you know, I think it's working with the FAI to see, is there an opportunity for sponsorships to be able to get the young ladies home? There are exemptions with the NCAA where they can go back and travel to play with their national team and train with the national team. So I think it's educating on how the system truly works and what the opportunities are, and then seeing, because I think unless we can create a system in Ireland that provides an opportunity for them to play full time and financially fund them, I think until that happens, I think we're still going to see, you know, a wave of players coming away. For me, it's worked out personally quite well. You know, did it stunt my career back then? But yes, probably so, because times are different now. You know, players can travel back and forth, you know, just like they do on the men's side. So, you know, I would love to see the collaboration. I'd love to see it as continuing to be an opportunity. I don't think it should be a death sentence that if a player chooses to come away, it impacts their national career. There have been tremendous success stories of young women that have come away. And, you know, in my role, I've talked with Dave Clark recently and connected with David Connolly over in Ireland with the FAI, and seeing, can we meet and sit and talk and educate on the opportunities? And I think the convention and bringing the FAI in with, you know, as part of a delegation into the convention, I think is another great way to set up opportunities to kind of create those forums where we can help each other understand what the opportunities are. So, sorry, that's a long-winded answer.
No. It's a very accurate answer. And I think we were talking beforehand too about, you know, switching to the men's side, obviously. You know, you talk about even in the women's side, you have under 19s in Ireland and the wins in the women's side. And, you know, if a lad or a girl doesn't make it into the first team, then they should be trying to funnel those kids maybe to the States.
Because
we all know the you know, kids, everyone develops differently on the development chart. Yeah. So, you know, a 17-year-old lad or girl or 18 that, you know, maybe is just about good enough for the 19s, but then goes and plays junior college soccer in Kansas for 2 years and absolutely smashes it, and then could maybe go back to Ireland and play with their club teams in the summer. They become a better player. They bring habits home and then come back, get the education. I always, you know, and I'm sure yourself as well, you always see kids that are eager to go back home. And not every Irish person wants to stay in America. Sure. And I do think there's a massive opportunity with on the men's and the women's side in Ireland to really use it as a tool to, you know, because if you don't make it after 19s in the men's or the women's, there's just senior football. There's nothing in the middle. So
that's right. Yeah.
They're used to have an A championship or a U21s, but I think, I think education is the key. It's like anything in life with football.
Well, and I think if you can get these top level Irish players into the top tier Division I schools, the training environment, the training facilities are off the charts, as you know yourself. I mean, we've seen, I mean, for a player to go down and play at Florida State or, it's an unbelievable experience for them to go in, and the level of training and care they're going to get, both in terms of player welfare, nutrition, strength and conditioning. I mean, it is second to none. They're not going to get that level of experience, I don't think, anywhere else.
There's no doubt the top level, it's amazing. And I think there's an opportunity for kids to go to junior college and NAI and develop and 19, 20, transfer to Division I. And I think everybody sees it around Europe. I have friends in the professional women's game in Scandinavia, and they're recruiting American college girls.
That's right, yeah.
So there is an education piece that's missing there, because, you know, in Sweden and Finland, these leagues are professional, and you know, they're filling their spots with Americans and Canadians that are coming over. But it's a topic we could probably spend a whole
all day,
a whole podcast on. So, you know, but I appreciate the answer. I obviously putting you on the spot a little bit with the article, but I think most Irish people that have boarded a plane and came over here definitely will feel the same way on that one. Sure. For sure. So
sure. Yep.
And just to throw in my two cents, I know for a fact we've had Stephen Murray on this before, and I know he brought a boy over last year. One boy's playing at Duke and one boy's playing at Notre Dame. So just the value of those two educations, right, no matter who you are, are very good to get. And as well as I do have friends that came over, I've played with, now playing in the USL after going through the college system. So it does develop, it does happen, different people. But anyways, Trish, going on to your role and kind of last year, we didn't get to have the convention 2021 in Kansas. What are you looking forward to that? You've kind of mentioned the FAI maybe coming over, different things happening through us and the North American Irish coaches. Maybe something for college coaches to look forward to in general. How do you see this event coming off? Based off what you're lining up.
Sure. So, I think everybody's hungry to get back together, right? I think COVID has taken away so much from everybody in general. So, the convention planning is already fast and furious, as you can imagine. In my role, I'm working directly with the convention team on coaching education. We have Ian Brady and those guys who work on the soccer piece of it. I'm working with folks from around the country on coaching development beyond the flags, ways in which we can talk about the mental health, diversity, equity training, Title IX training, legal services for coaches to help them with negotiating contracts, and just finding ways in which to expand the role and the experiences to align with what the coaches are dealing with on a day-to-day. So just taking a real, post-COVID, we want to acknowledge the hard work that was done by the coaches. We want to acknowledge what was just really a bizarre year, but to see what coaches have been able to accomplish, we want to acknowledge and create spaces for coaches to really share their experiences. We've got over 300 plus companies coming in with soccer products as part of the exhibit hall. There will be over 40 presenters. There'll be just lots and lots of sessions. As you know, we run those two big large fields, and we'll have guest speakers from literally from all over the world that'll be coming in. And working right now with Jeff Van Dusen and Dave and some of those guys on a delegation coming in from the FAI, and really hoping if we can to pull in one of the bigger names of the FAI, which I think is a great opportunity for the Irish coaches as well, right? To see see your own delegation coming in, and they're always a part of the convention. So just really excited to create spaces. It's a fun time. It's a big social event. You get to see, the soccer sessions from some of the best around the country, and certainly from all over. And just talking about total player development, whether it's nutrition, exercise science, mental health, and then really looking at some of the key issues in the game right now that are affecting coaches, whether it's diversity, equity, and inclusion, and making sure we can arm coaches with the tools on how to create inclusive spaces for the players and their program and stuff. So, but I think that we know people are going to be excited to be back together and making sure that we create a really, really fun environment with plenty of a social time for the coaches. We're working on getting the biggest space I can find for all those Irish coaches at the convention. So, and just get in the broom closet. We already we'll put end in the broom closet in the corner and keep them tucked away.
Just give me some space away from John O'Rourke and them lads.
That's right, yeah. But I mean, there's plenty of, there's a great Irish crew that, we're working on creating some opportunities for the Irish coaches there, and the Hall of Fame breakfast, social spaces, and I'm in a position where I get to try to leverage my role in supporting the Irish coaches and kind of meeting their needs if there's specific topics and things that we want to address. The other thing for me is in my role is really connecting young coaches and helping them on their journey and giving back in the same way that people have taken care of me. So I'm most looking forward to that and just being able to connect with folks from home and just like-minded people. So
Great stuff, Trish. So just kind of to recap, obviously your role, college service, for anybody that's kind of listening and going, well, what is that role? Obviously, you've touched on a few things you want to get done, but what does your role kind of entail? Just a little bit about it, and what would you like, where would you like it to go kind of in the future? You know, if obviously you can't share everything, but just little bits.
Yeah, so in the Division I environment right now, we're working, which I think would be a trickle-down effect if we could pull it off, is the 21st century model for the men's game, which would be to create a two-semester model. So in my role, I liaison with folks at the NCAA in helping with the legislative proposal. I work collaboratively with the various conferences that would sponsor the legislation in trying to get it passed. On the women's side, we're working on an expanded season in Division I. But every division has their needs. You know, everybody wants to get away from back-to-back play on championship play, Division I, Division II, Division III, eliminate overtime. There's various topics that pop up year to year, whether it's playing rules or legislative. So my role as United Soccer Coaches Programs Officer is to work on behalf of those colleges in getting legislation passed. And I work both at the NCAA National Office. Another role is working collaboratively to help with advancing the college game and the bridge between college game and the MLS, and certainly the NWSL as well, and making sure that we have good, strong relations there. You know, for me as a United Soccer Coaches, we want to make sure that we serve our mission, which is to create growth opportunities for all coaches. So I'm as invested and Dara in the D3 coaches as much as I am the D1. I've served in all those divisions in some capacity or another. So I understand what a grind it can be and things that maybe get overlooked. So I want to be able to provide a voice for those coaches, whether they're at a Division III school as a part-time coach, help them with how to navigate and how to pursue new opportunities if they choose to go into this as a full-time career. And so it's just really, you know, at the current moment, it's a lot of listening and hearing what folks want to accomplish within the various divisions, or listening for themes in terms of, like, with COVID, people are concerned right now. Coaches are concerned about financial vulnerabilities with the programs because resources are being cut because of financial impact due to COVID. How can we help the coaches understand ways in which they can navigate the challenges within their own department, working with their fundraising and advancement team? So those are some of the ways that we're hoping to help coaches and you know, connect them with a network of supporters that can help them grow in their role and certainly sustain their role. So it's a great gig. I get to you know, run around with folks in all corners of the soccer world, and it's just really nice to be back in the soccer community full time. So
for sure, Trish. So if you know, if anybody's looking to find you on social media, are you a social media person or an email, or if anybody's looking to get in touch
and wants to do
stuff?
I have an Instagram account, Facebook, all that good stuff. The easiest way to probably find me is on the United Soccer Coaches. It's really easy. It's P. Hughes, my last name, at unitedsoccercoaches.org. But I'm certainly on the website and, you know, again, keen to help just about anybody I can advance in the game, whether it's players looking for graduate opportunities, or you know, grad assistants looking to advance into full-time coaching roles. Like you, Enda, I've been fortunate with a great network of people. And in my role, I have access to coaches at every level across the country. And, you know, and coaches are always looking for good support and good assistance. And athletic departments are always looking for good head coaches. So it's nice to kind of have my finger on the pulse of what's going on and be able to provide support for all and anyone involved. And certainly talk about my own journey and learn from my mistakes along the way. So I'm sure there were many.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're still making mistakes along every the day. Way, right?
Sure, that's, I'm on this podcast.
Isn't that? Yeah, and we've made exactly. We might have made a mistake talking to you.
I mean, it must have been a slow night to ask me to come on, for God's sake. That's okay.
Ah, no, listen again, on behalf of everyone at the North American Irish Coaches Association, it's a great honor to have you on, and we're very proud of you. It's always nice to see someone from Ireland that does really well and you know, climbs the ladder, and it's especially with the United Soccer Coaches being such a well-known organization around the world. So we're here to support you in whatever way we can, and we thank you for your time tonight, Trish, and we wish you the best of luck as well in your job, and please God, we'll be seeing you in Kansas for something, a cup of tea, a drink, something.
We won't we won't say what, but for something.
Something.
Thank you, Trish.
Yeah. Listen, thanks, lads. I appreciate it very much, and look forward to you know working with you guys, you know, as we go forward. So.
Yeah, cheers, Trish. For coming on.
All right, cheers. Bye, everybody.
Mighty woman. Thank you.
Good stuff. See you. Bye, Dara.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.